Well, good morning, everybody. It is June 29th, 2022. My name's Larry Jacobs, and this is Free K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for listening today. Maybe you're in the archives, and you know we archive everything over at ace-ed.org. That's the home website of our American Consortium for Equity in Education, and we do a lot over there. We have a new website called teacher-retention.com, all about the teacher, the educator shortage. All right, we have our magazine over there, which is called Equity and Access Pre-K-12, our online journal. It's a nice magazine. Just go over there and click on the cover and enjoy it. All right, we have all our podcasts over there, as well as our Excellence in Equity Awards program, which is starting to wind down for nominations. If you want to nominate your colleagues or a company you work with or whatever, their Excellence in Equity, please. Okay, just go over to the awards icon at ace-ed.org. And also we have seltoday.org, Social Emotional Learning, our resource center for that. But everything's at ace-ed.org if you want to check it out. We have a terrific show for you today. We have the superintendent of schools for Arlington, Virginia, Dr. Francisco Duran, and also my good pal, one of my favorite guests, the one and only Dr. Maria Armstrong, who's the executive director of the American of the Association of Latino Administrators and Superintendents, better known as ALAS. So let me say hi to this newcomer, Dr. Francisco Duran. Good morning, Dr. Duran. I'm Larry Jacobs. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing very well. Thank you.
That's great. How's the things down in Virginia today, down in Arlington?
Everything's going well.
Good enough. I love it. And Maria, welcome back as always.
Hey, Larry. How you doing? So good to be back.
It's good to have you here. Where are you? I could barely hear you when you said that.
So I am in...
You're fading in and out. You're fading in and out.
How's that? Is that better?
Yeah. We can hear you now.
Okay. Well, that's
hi, Maria.
Because I was so far away from you. I'm actually in D.C., across the bridge from Dr. Duran.
I was just going to say, I'd like to introduce you to my new friend, Dr. Duran. You guys are going on lunch together. Okay? What a coincidence. What's in D.C. today? I thought you were going to say you were in New Orleans for ISTE. That's what I thought you were going to say, but you're in D.C.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, in D.C. We've got a full plate. Couldn't get away this time.
Yeah, that's all right. It's okay. There'll be plenty more. Next year's in Philadelphia, my hometown, which reminds me, Dr. Can I call you Francisco? What do you like me to call you, Dr. Duran?
Whichever you prefer. I'm fine.
I'm going to call you Francisco then, if I
okay,
might.
Okay, sure.
And please call
Absolutely.
Me Larry. Okay? And I saw on your resume that you went on your resume, your background up on site, that you went to, that you worked in Philadelphia. Yeah, that's my hometown.
I sure did.
I went all
I worked
through
in
Philly
Philadelphia.
Schools.
Yeah, I worked in Philadelphia for many years. I was a regional superintendent in North Philadelphia schools. I supervised anywhere from 27 to about 40 schools because we had some different reorganizations. But I was all in North Philly. My main office is on 5th and Lehigh.
I know Lehigh Avenue all too well. I used to go to Phillies games at Connie Mack Stadium at 21st and Lehigh when I was
there
a
you
kid.
Go.
And I taught in Cheltenham, just on the north side of Philadelphia.
Okay.
Okay. So there you go. For years, I'm in Maine now, but I taught there for years. Okay. And I can prove to you I lived there because you were also involved in Trenton. And the most famous thing about Trenton, are you ready?
I was.
Trenton makes the world takes. Trenton
That's
makes
right.
the world takes. There you go. Okay.
That's the old motto, yes.
Great to have you here, Francisco. Thank
you
so much.
Thank you very much.
I have to ask, how long? Oh, my pleasure. How long have you been in Arlington?
2 years now in Arlington as superintendent.
Wow, and I have to ask, you hit the pandemic years. How's it been? Lucky you.
Yeah, came in right in the middle of the pandemic, and
yep.
So it's been obviously a challenge to make sure that we can get our students and staff back into school safely, but we've been working very hard at that, and it was great to have everyone back in person this past year. So.
I think it's just terrific, okay? And I wish you all the best of luck down there. It's hard to run a big school district these days. okay? And you're going to do a continually great job down there. And just I got to go over and introduce my friend Maria, okay, the one and only, I always like to say, Dr. Maria Armstrong, okay, the executive director of ALAS. And we're going to focus on that today. We're going to talk about the need for a strong network if you're a superintendent and how that affects in particular if you are a Latino superintendent today. Okay, it's all good stuff, and that's what the organization is all about. Maria, my favorite firecracker, tell me all about ALAS. Okay? I'll tell you.
Well, yeah.
You are the best.
Well, first of all,
you are the best,
Maria. I'm going to take that firecracker comment as a compliment.
It is a compliment. You know that, okay? I mean, I just love having you on the show. I got to tell you, I just do, right?
Well,
we
appreciate that. Really appreciate the fact that, you know, having ALAS on your platform is truly an honor, and we. When we think about our networking, that's pretty much have been the signature framework for ALAS. You know, starting out as a handful of superintendents who had the foresight and the vision to be able to create something that was unique, that they didn't feel they saw in other organizations, and they wanted to create something special where, you know, sometimes and we're human, right? Sometimes you just want to. Have that conversation that, you know, may resonate with someone in the same position, same background maybe of understanding.
Great point.
And it's not exclusionary in any sense what our networks are, because we, you know, we find ourselves in a variety of networks. And so, but ALAS really wanted to focus on providing that space, that environment, and support to be able to foster that notion that the founders had. So I think that's been definitely the strength of ALAS, and it has led to the development. We've got, you know, five solid networks, if you will, that have facilitators. They organize for various activities throughout the year as touch points via, you know, whether it's online. And then we also, you know, we come together when we have our live in-person summits and conferences. So
Coming up in Puerto Rico in October. Yeah.
That's right. We're hoping to see you down there, Larry.
I'm hoping. We're still looking at going down there, and we just may do it. I may bring my wife, Carol, and we're talking about it, believe me. Okay?
We're looking at it.
I appreciate the invite.
We want you to do your show live from Puerto Rico.
I would love to. Okay. But we're going to see what we can do. Yeah, it would be. Thank you, Francisco. It would be great. I would just love it. And, you know, Maria, what you just said, I mean, you folks are open to everybody. Okay. But there's a change. There are two things I want to say. A, everybody likes to have a support network of people that they have something basic in common with, okay? And, you know, I'm sure Dr. Duran, you know, with AASA and all those wonderful organizations, National Superintendents Roundtable, you know those organizations, and they're terrific, okay?
Absolutely.
But it's good to have the support network of something so basic, you know, that kind of thing, like a national super group of female superintendents or whatever. You have something in common from the get-go. Okay, yeah. And that is a key thing. And there's another thing. I'm going to ask this before I get to you, Francisco. Maria, what's the percentage of Latino kids in American public schools right now? Do you know offhand?
Yeah, we're at, I want to say, 52% last report out.
Astounding, right? Okay, that's a major sea change. Okay, from, you know, whatever you want to say, 20 years ago, whatever. All right? Okay, there's a lot of Latino kids in schools, and we have to have school leadership that reflects the kids we have. And that doesn't mean other people can't do a great job and don't care about them. That's not what we're talking about. But again, you have to have that base that makes sense. Dr. Durant, Francisco, how many Latino kids, if I may ask, are in Arlington schools?
So we have a very large percentage. We have almost 30% of our population.
That's my case. Yeah, I think it's the fastest growing ethnic group within American public education. So we have
yes,
to
is.
Be very. It is. So we have to be very, very aware of this. Okay, and make sure people create schools that make sense for the kids we're dealing with. And I always relate schools to Walmart. Walmart wouldn't do well unless they knew their customers well and created a place where those customers feel comfortable. That's why they're the biggest, okay, and the products that they need. And it's the same thing with schools. We have to create schools that, although they have to be standardized with the base knowledge of learning, okay, they have to meet the needs of their particular constituency, and that's why it's so darn important. That's my speech for today. What do you think, Maria?
I love it.
All right. It's true, okay? It's just so amazing. Yeah, it really is. And I'm going to add, and Maria, I'll ask you, well, no, let me ask Francisco first. Francisco, You're the superintendent of a major school. How many kids in that district?
We have approximately 29,000.
Wow. And how many schools?
42.
Yeah, you're like the Elon Musk of education here. I mean, there's a lot of, right? There's a lot of stuff going on, all right? On top of politics, all the politics of public education these days. But there's all kinds of things going on, okay? Mm-hmm. And the one that strikes us, okay, is teacher shortages. That really, we even started a website called teacher-retention.com. We're really concerned about this. Teacher shortages, changes in curriculum, public interest in curriculum, if I may, both conservative and liberal, school safety. God forbid that thing in Uvalde ever happens again. I'm going to talk about that with you guys in a second. Okay, Francisco, as your day goes on, okay, what do you focus on with all this stuff coming into your office? What's your day like?
Well, each day, of course, is very different, right, as you're dealing with overseeing a school system. But, you know, what I constantly make sure each day that I spend time to do is check in and see how our students are doing, how our staff is doing, and looking at data regularly to understand what's happening in my schools, going out and visiting schools, being present so that you can have those conversations and talk with teachers and families. Very, very important. And I think part of what we see with teacher shortages and things happening that way, teachers feel they don't have a lot of voice in their work. So I really try and create spaces for them to do that and to get them the tools they need, the resources they need, and also, let's be real, the compensation that they need. And our nation has not invested in teachers as a priority. They talk about it a lot. A lot of politicians talk about it. But when it comes down to what's really important about investing in resources they need and the compensation, they're empty words.
Here, I agree with you wholeheartedly. How is Arlington doing in terms of the educator shortage, teacher retention, all that sort of thing?
We've been doing fairly well. We've had challenges like anywhere else, but we have been doing very well. And because I do believe that we invest in our teachers this year, working with my school board, we made compensation a priority. And we provided a very solid compensation package and increase. But again, it's not just that. It's creating the conditions. And so we listened to teachers, and I heard what their needs were. They needed more literacy resources, so we got literacy resources. More math resources, we got math resources. And right now, the biggest challenge I think that all of us are facing is how do we meet the social-emotional needs of our students? And that's an ongoing challenge for teachers and for all of us, frankly, to solve. For students who had been not in school for a couple of years to now transition to be in school, there was a lot and the trauma that we face as a nation. But imagine our children, the trauma they face dealing with the last few years of the pandemic. And so I think that
is the last few weeks.
Piece.
Yeah. How about the last few weeks?
Last few weeks, of course, yes. Yeah. Whether we dealt with COVID, whether we dealt with the fear of safety, or let's be real, also the discussions and the racism that has been occurred. You know, at least I used to say quite a bit the last few years, we've had two pandemics, a racial one as well as a health crisis one.
Well said. Well said. And there's also another pandemic going on, and that's a pandemic of violence.
Yes.
All right. And I have to say something here, if I may, and this affects every single person, every single American. But what happened in Uvalde, okay, and Maria, and I know you had a prayer meeting about, or a prayer Zoom meeting, whatever you did with that, I know you did that. Okay, talk about the impact of Uvalde on all this, which must have hit home to you guys, because I mean, there were so many Latino people involved in this. It's just a horror show. What are your thoughts on that, Maria?
So, you know, a couple. One is just reaching out immediately. To, you know, because we have members. We have actual members from Uvalde in that district. And so reaching out and asking very simply and just to let them know that they are in our thoughts, I asked, what do you need? And it was very simple. They said, send prayers. And so the only thing I could think of course, is like, okay, we can do that. But we need to do that as a nation. And so that's where the notion of holding Fridays as a national virtual prayer meditation. It's 15 minutes and it's consecutive for 21 Fridays in memoriam of 21 Fridays. I think
kids.
We just finished up our fifth. And so we do that, and we do it in
number
English, and we do it in Spanish, and we do it in English, and it's a total of 15 minutes. You know, and it's a moment of pause because I just don't want this, and no one does, not just me. No one wants this to be just another one of those that happen, and then the cameras leave, and then people resume.
Yeah.
Healing
yeah.
is healing, and prayer is something that we can, meditation, whatever you want to call it, that pause just to reflect and remind ourselves how precious our time and our how humbling and also honorable it is for us to serve in the capacity of educating students.
Nice.
You know, wherever your thoughts are, just bring them back to the folks who need that prayer, that energy, if you will, that positive energy to help them through this.
Right, it's brutal. It's brutal. And Francisco, I mean, you know, I can imagine just being a superintendent. You have to, being a superintendent is running a major corporation, okay? But most major corporations don't have to deal with these social emotional needs, okay, like we have to in education. I just imagine it's been rough the last couple of weeks, you know, as we think about all this, and I assume school safety is one of the things that's uppermost on your mind. I mean, I don't know how you do it. I thought of that. I can't remember his name, the superintendent down there. I did the Harold something or other. Okay. And I was thinking, you know, you always think this can't happen here. This can't happen here. And then all of a sudden something like that happens. Okay, and all of a sudden you're confronted with this, and as a superintendent you think to yourself, my God, this could happen here. And then we can't get complacent about it. It's just, it's scary, I got to tell you. Go ahead.
Well, what's really concerning, and I hope that this has raised more of awareness of the fact that, you know, this, as you said a minute ago, this is a public health crisis of gun violence. This is not a school crisis. We are certainly a part of needing to make sure our students and staff are safe. But this is a public health crisis, and the answer to stopping that is not, you know, arming educators in our school or just focusing on better health, mental health in schools. We have to focus on better mental health in schools, absolutely. But if we as a nation don't take a hard look at some of the societal factors that go on, why are we, you know, one, the access to guns, preventing access to dangerous weapons, expanding background checks, you know, those types of things, rigorous gun violence prevention research. There's a lot that can be done that is we are partners in as superintendents, and we're partners as school leaders, but this is a public health crisis that our nation
needs
to step up, and not always point the finger at what's happening in schools. We will do our job. We've been doing our job to keep our students safe, and we'll continue. We need more help. We need more support for counselors and psychologists and social workers.
To say
more support there. But even with that, we can get all the support we need for additional psychologists, counselors, and social workers in school. But if the community doesn't address the mental health behavior issues out in the community, and there's still ongoing access to guns, then this is unfortunately going to be something that we have to talk about regularly, and that's something that I am tired of. and many of my colleagues and superintendents were tired of having to talk about these issues when everyone does not want to step up. Now, I do think, you know, the Congress did pass legislation for the first time in a couple of decades, and it was a right step forward, but there's a whole lot more to be done there. And
it was a baby step forward.
Better access.
It was a baby step forward.
Mental and behavior health for in school and out of school, and gun violence is really needs to be the focus, not school violence. I hear people talk about school violence, but wait a minute, this is gun violence.
Yeah,
this is a
health
epidemic of public.
You are absolutely right, and we have to continue to fight this tidal wave of violence. Okay, mm-hmm. Go ahead, please, Maria. Go.
I was going to say, can I also add, you know, just to underscore what Dr. Duran said, you know, it's not just an educational issue. It is our nation's issue. And so one of the things that, prayer is one thing, and that was the first step in a response. But we didn't stop there. As an organization, we're actually hosting on July 22nd a convening here in D.C. with other major nonprofits and with corporations, private industry folks, as well as superintendents and other educators in the system to come together and not just, you know, commiserate on the way things are, but in fact to acknowledge what things are and how do we start to make these steps forward, as Francisco said, so that if we've got to change, you know, pen to paper, to get some of this stuff done, which is working in collaboration with a litany of the you know, things that are going on, then that's what we need to do. And, you know, just as some folks may have thought that, you know, women's rights were affected overnight, well, you know what? So too can gun control to the where we are. And I'm not lobbying for, you know, taking guns out of, you know, the First Amendment and all that stuff. What I'm saying
Second Amendment, and we know that.
Second Amendment.
You don't have to explain that.
It's about, you know, how are we going to conduct ourselves for the citizenry of now, but for generations to come, and that we have to be aware of these so that we don't find ourselves sitting on the sidelines of something overturned after decades. And so that's the ongoing piece of you know, you talk about education. We've got to continue to educate one another, have these kinds of opportunities to talk about it and do something about it so that we are, you know, creating something better for our generations to come.
Yeah. And for our kids, and we have to, not, it's society-wide, but we also have to just look at improving, continuing, I'm going to say this the right way, to improve our schools, both structurally and internally, because if we don't do that and create a very strong picture and a very nice workplace, we're going to have more and more trouble getting people to become teachers.
Mm-hmm.
All right. It's that simple. I don't know, Francisco, do you know Sherry Campy over in Baldwin, New York, superintendent?
I do not. No, I don't. No.
She was on the show earlier this week, and you'd love her, okay? And she made a good point to me. She said, we have to make schools conducive to people, that this is the place where they want to go to work. And if we make schools look good and feel good and everything about them is good, people will want to come to work here, all right? And that's a whole thing that I'm concerned about, all right? I'm curious, as you guys, how, Francisco, you deal with certainly a number of colleges to provide teachers for your graduating from school. How's the pipeline looking, okay, from your angle? How's the pipeline?
So the pipeline, it depends. For special education teachers, for math teachers, we have a real concern with our pipeline. So we have more needs of students in the area of special education, more English language learner needs, and we don't have the pipeline of staff ready to step into those roles. Some of our other areas we do have, but I think right now what we're seeing is that after the pandemic, we're paying one positive outcome of the pandemic is people are now paying much more attention to student need, we do not have what we need for area of special education and math teachers. That's a huge, huge hole for us, not just here in Virginia, but nationally.
Everywhere. Yeah, everywhere. And we just have to make sure. And let me make it more specific. 52% of American public school students are of Latino descent. All right. How are we doing with getting Latino students as becoming educators? And I'll ask Francisco, but if you want to swing it over to Maria, but maybe you have a thought from your end. Okay, Francisco?
Yeah,
Latino kids becoming teachers.
We're not doing well in that area. We have much more to do, and that we have to invest in our Latino students. First of all, you think about, right, to become a teacher, you have to be able to graduate from high school to go to college. Well, our Latino graduation rate is nationally one of the lowest. When we see our dropout rate, it's one of the highest dropout rates. So we've got to also start investing and seeing what's happening in our secondary schools. Creating programs, one thing that we have here, which is a great opportunity in my school system, a lot of school systems have this, our assistant to teacher program, where we take our paraeducators, those are assistants in the classroom, and support them to become teachers. Good success in that area. So those are some things. But again, if we don't have our high school students graduating and Latino high school students graduating at the rate that they need to be, well, then of course we're not going to have a pipeline compared to others. And that's a major, major crisis, I think, in our nation, is the high school experience for our Latino students.
Right. And that's unfortunate. And I'm going to ask the next question. Why are we seeing that? At this stage of the game, why are we still seeing that? Or why are we seeing that?
A couple of the reasons, I think, are one, many of our Latino students and are English language learners. They are not getting the right proper support they need for that in their school. Unfortunately, we're seeing more and more students not see a value in post-secondary. There's not a lot of access to higher courses that we look at compared to other groups. Our Latino students are not put in those advanced courses, college prep courses. They're not even given high expectations, I think, for them by and large. And so that's a major area for us to focus on at ALAS. How do we help our leaders? And that's why it's important, that you said at the beginning of the conversation, to have leaders that go through ALAS that can make sure that we're setting those high expectations. And we're looking closely at the data to understand where we're seeing this happen. What are we doing as leaders? Because that's our responsibility when we see that, to make a difference.
Yeah, and, you know, the corporate world is the world of work, I should say it that way, is dying for highly trained people of ethnic origin. Okay, that's something that corporations want. They want diversity. Mm-hmm. Okay, and I would hope that kids who are African American, kids who are Latino, begin to see the incredible opportunity. The world's waiting for them, and they have to see that. Okay, it's that simple. And I have to say something else, okay? And I don't know about you, Maria, because your resume is incredible, but I know Dr. Duran, just talk about this. Francisco, you were the first person in your family to graduate college, and look where you are today. Look at this.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, how do you get that across to all these kids? Look at you. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, we need more of you. We need more of you. And Maria's another one, okay? And we've done a number of shows together, okay? But she helped the Puerto Rico Department of Education, okay, with Hurricane Maria. She worked in biotech, okay? Now she's the executive. She was a superintendent, all these sort of things, a principal, all these sort of things in education, not a superintendent. And now you're executive director of ALAS. Maria, nationwide, how do we get the point across to these kids that the world's waiting for them? How do we structure education, okay, so they get that message? Maybe that's the better way to put it, okay? We must be doing something wrong, okay? How do we make it right? Maria.
Well, it's a sad day in the country when I'm an anomaly.
I agree with you.
I'll start out.
Okay, you'll always be, because you're exceptional. Okay, you're exceptional. But now you make it. Okay.
So you know, I there's no one thing that I could put my finger on per se. I think it's because, you know, we're human, and we are a nation that I hope is not digressing, but going through what we're going through to evolve to a better outcome. And part of that is still, it's very embedded or threaded in our systems, where, like, you know, to Francisco's point, I mean, I remember when I was discouraged, I was never even provided an opportunity to take advanced courses. And I always considered myself, you know, somewhat of a smart cookie. And so not having that high expectation, you're talking about a traditional system that is like moving a mountain to change, because every state is different. And originally, you know, think about who the teachers were, think about who the servant, who they were serving as students. And when they are not equipped, when we don't invest in constant training and upgrading of skill set and heart, teachers are not going to have the skill set to address when changes come. Then all it's almost this, what do you mean we've got 30% of Latinos in our school? You know, it's like the communities in and of themselves, too. There's a shift that happens that oftentimes, because schools are often ignored, they're not paying attention to. And then you go back to the corporation piece, it's everything that you pay attention to gets paid attention to, right? And so you may want to have a diverse workforce, but if you are not working shoulder to shoulder and investing as well in what the workforce will be, well, then you can want all you want. But if you really want to do a change and have that come to fruition, it's got to be a mutual relationship and getting it done. And so I think that there's a lot to be said where when communities come together and they roll up their sleeves, there's no task tougher to get done if the community is willing to do that. But it takes everybody to want to do that, and then it takes the leadership like Francisco has demonstrated. You know, it takes leadership to, regardless of the system that you're in, to push through and make it happen. It should not have to be that way for some and not for all, and vice versa. It shouldn't be that easy for some and not for all.
You know, with all going on and the change in the demographics nationally of students, and I'll end, thank you, Maria, that was great. Okay, Francisco, are they changing the way they educate future teachers that meet the needs of today's students? When somebody comes out of education school, how are they, okay? What's the word? What's changed in teacher education that helps this along, if anything?
Well, I can say I'm very proud of here in Virginia. We are changing how we're supporting our elementary teachers. We, as a Commonwealth of Virginia, we've shifted to making sure we're teaching the science of reading and making sure teachers are coming in to be able to understand phonics, decoding, basic skills that have been lost over time. And so that's been a major shift in Virginia. We're just starting. We're just starting. We're on the right track in that way. I think I'm happy to say a lot of our universities, college prep universities in the D.C. metro area, are also in the last several years been preparing teachers to be more culturally competent, and there's more courses to understand how do you work with different populations of students.
I think there's more
work done, and I think there needs to be more work done, but those are two promising changes, at least, again, only I can speak to locally here in this D.C. metro area.
Now, I'm going to talk to you about, I'm going to give you a holler after this show. We're going to talk about that a little bit more. That, to me, is a very interesting thing, making sure teachers understand what their students are like now and how they have to teach them understanding the students culturally. That, to me, is a basic change, okay, that needs to happen. Okay, we've got to understand these kids, and we've got to get these kids to understand there's a world of opportunity out there for them. I have one question. This goes to Francisco. Francisco, I'm always reminded of the sportscaster, the national commentator, Bryant Gumbel. Okay, as you know, is an African-American gentleman, and he's absolutely superb at his job, always has been. And his line was that, quote, "I'm sick and tired of being a credit to my race." Okay, race has nothing to do with it, is his point. He's just a talented guy, and so are you. All right? And, you know, you're a Latino superintendent. Okay? Do you feel like the world is holding you to a higher standard? Okay? Because of that. Okay? What's your sense of that as you run Arlington Schools?
Well, I think in general in life, not specifically to my current role, I mean, it's often been a challenge. And my grandparents, at a very young age, I'm thankful for them. They may not have had formal education, but they had life education, which has helped me to be where I am today. And really making sure that, yes, you are looked at differently. You do have to make sure you work a little extra harder, because people are wondering and looking at, why are you here? Why are you in this room? How did you get in this room? And so it's not, and I've been very blessed with many mentors who've opened the doors for me and opportunities, but they've all said, I'm opening the door for you, but you got to make sure you can stay in the room, right? So, many, many times of doors being opened have been blessings, but once I've got in, I've recognized I've got to step up. And again, that's not true of my current role only. That's been for my life, I would say, and I've been very fortunate because of the foundation my family gave to me and so many of our Latino families. I think that's another disconnect we have with our school systems and some of our teachers and our principals who don't have that cultural competency yet and who need to get that, and is really understanding the value of life education that our Latino families and many of our African-American families and families of color have around this tenacity and this hard work and this value in education, albeit maybe not formal education. Maybe they don't come to every parent conference that you have. Maybe they're not there to every formal meeting, but they're supporting their children 1,000%. And if we don't connect and understand that, then we're losing a valuable partner, because our parents are key partners in education.
You're darn right. Thank you. That was an excellent answer. Maria, just nationally, you talk to everybody across the country. By the way, I didn't mention Francisco's president of the board of directors of ALAS. Okay, so yes. Great for you being involved. I forgot to mention that. Obviously, you tell Maria what to do. Okay, is that correct, Maria?
No. I support Maria. I support her, making sure we can provide her all the support she needs. She does a phenomenal job. Yeah.
Good answer. Okay. Hey, Maria, do you find
two things.
Do you find that the Latino superintendents and administrators still feel they're held to a different standard? Okay. Female, you know, et cetera, et cetera. What's your thought on that? Just nationally, we heard it from Francisco. What about just what you feel or hear nationally?
Yeah, you know, The short answer is yes, and that's because, one, if we weren't, there would be more of us, and there's such a small number. Small number of Latinos, and then once they get into the position, I'll tell you, and you know, part of it being live, you know, lived experience is that I talked to so many different suits, and if you are Latino and you're in a community that maybe is not, you know, or even if you're in a community that is, there are still certain, you know, oftentimes vocal minority folks that want to be able to say, this is not what we want here. And so the only person that is the face of that district is the superintendent. And then if you add in, you know, the flavor of being a female on top of being Latino, then you're also considered that, I mean, there are some practices that come into question even when it comes to hiring staff, because you got to remember, the superintendent is the only employee to the school board. And so that would mean that the superintendent has full authority in the hiring practices of his or her staff. But instead, and I just had this conversation with a soup last week, as a matter of fact, they were saying, you know, if they would just get rid of having these community-based tables that are part of the hiring practice, it almost makes me feel like I don't have the authority to hire my own staff. In a corporation, like you said, is what we're held to for accountability, but we're not provided the autonomy to run. And so there's just some areas there's some areas that you have to you know, you're curious about, you have to wonder, and you have to question, and you have to figure out whether it's if it's that, or if there's a bigger, you know, method to the madness, and that's why we often tell, you know, our up and coming leaders, look, the interview process is one for you to make judgment about where you want to be employed, as well as theirs. It's got to be a mutual
two-way street
to be able to grow.
Two-way street.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. And when you know your worth, even no matter what everybody else out there says they want to claim your worth is, you got to go with that intuition and your gut to be able to say, you know, something is just not right here. Because you do, you know, for all intents and purposes, it's great when you get to become that superintendent. But you got to make sure that it's great because you're going to serve the community that you set out to serve. And so as long as you can keep those two pieces in check, I think that people will start to see the successes, such as Dr. Duran. And when they start to see the successes take place and not just filling of the seat because you are Latino, I think we'll start to make some headway. But it's been a slow, arduous process for sure.
And we have to move that process along, okay? It's,
absolutely.
We just want the best people. Okay, it's that simple. Okay, and by the way, thank you for constantly saying Dr. Duran's last name more properly than I did with my Philly accent, Duran.
Okay? Okay.
I think I had you very Irish as opposed to very Latino. Okay, Duran, you know, it's great. So anyway, we got to go. Both of you are my two doctors here, Dr. Armstrong, Dr. Duran. Okay, I love saying that. Okay,
thank you
both. And Francisco, is it okay if I get in touch with you? I got one follow-up.
Absolutely,
or something.
Sure.
Thank you.
Sure.
I appreciate that. Okay,
all right. Thank you for having us.
Oh, my pleasure, my honor, indeed. And Maria, you're the best. I said that before. I still mean it. You're the best.
Thank you, Larry.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you, guys.
Bye-bye.
Okay, Dr. Maria Armstrong, she is the best. Okay, and Dr. Francisco Duran. Okay, I'm saying that more properly now. Okay, who is the superintendent of schools and present board of directors of ALAS superintendent of schools in Arlington, Virginia? All right, we'll archive over at ace-ed.org. Go over, see what we do. It's good stuff. Thanks for listening.